Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at the world of exotic pets. And we'll be doing that in just a second with Dr. Kurt Sladke, who's a clinical associate professor in zoological medicine and section head of the Special Species Health Service at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, coming up here on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Oakwood Village University Woods, a locally owned and operated nonprofit retirement community, offering a full continuum of care and services, located on Madison's west side. More at oakwoodvillage.net. Support also comes from Dream House by Dream Kitchens, dedicated to transforming home remodeling dreams into reality, from design to completion with one company. More at dream-kitchens.com, located on Verona Road in Madison.
Always great when we have Dr. Kurt Sladke from the University of Wisconsin come by. He's a clinical associate professor in zoological medicine, section head of the Special Species Health Service at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Incredible range of experience and depth of knowledge in the care of exotic pets. And we're happy to have him with us today. And Dr. Sladke, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. I'm really happy to be back. Always excited to come and talk to you.
It's funny, is you always bring an exotic pet along, and today is no exception. What did you bring for us today?
So today I brought a ball python along. Ball pythons are an African species, a small species, and they tend to ball up in one's hand when they're held and calm.
Cool little.
So originally called a royal python because they were worn in ancient civilizations as jewelry.
Oh my goodness. So they're pretty much harmless in most ways.
Right. They're non-venomous. They're probably the most popular snake pet species we see nowadays. And for good reason, they're very easygoing. And whenever you have a carnivorous animal like a snake, they're pretty low maintenance for feeding compared to some of the other exotic pets that we deal with.
Do you feed him or her live, or things that have already passed on?
Yeah, we strongly recommend people purchase frozen rodents and thaw them for snakes, not feeding live prey, because, if you were a rat caught in a small cage with a snake, you'd bite, right? Back. So rodents tend to do some serious damage in snakes, and so we tend to recommend feeding frozen thawed prey.
You are board certified in zoological medicine, and you're one of only 130 vets in the whole world who are, and we've talked about this in the past, but it's always worth repeating. What does this actually mean? There's only 130 of you.
Yeah, so it means that I've taken a board exam, which wasn't fun because it's having to know everything from tarantulas to whales, bit about medicine of everything. But I did a residency in zoological medicine, and then you have to qualify for the exam and take the exam. And once board certified, there are very few worldwide who actually have that specialty. And there are only two of us, and both of us at the university now. My colleague is also now newly board certified within the last year. So two of us in the state who are specialists in all non-domestic animals, zoo, wildlife, and exotic pets.
You know, just for fun, and as kind of an aside to what we're doing today, what is one of the more unusual animals that you've dealt with over time?
Well, I would say that some of my favorite animals are working with great apes, so gorillas and chimpanzees. And I've had some pretty interesting experiences with, first of all, great apes know you're the vet after one meeting. And every meeting after that, they're not very happy seeing you. So they tend to throw feces at me and scream at me. And so it's I always find them interesting. On the other hand, darting an animal that looks like you're darting a human when you have to put anesthetize them can be a little stressful on both of us.
Wow. Dr. Kurt Sladke, our guest today. If you have a question for him, do you have an exotic pet? Would you maybe enjoy having one? What would you like? Give us a call with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post a photo. Maybe you've got an exotic pet. Love to see a photo of it on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and you can post your questions or your comments there. And Judith has posted, I believe, a photo of herself. Is it of yourself? Oh, yeah. She's posted a photo of herself with the snake. Where is it? Well, I'll have to. I'm sure it's here somewhere. I'll find it. Anyway, if you want to see the snake that we were talking about, and Judith as well, go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And I bet if you go to posts to the page, would be my guess. No, not post to the page. Oh, gosh. Here I got into that. It should be right there somewhere. I'll find it sooner or later. And you'll probably find it faster than me, than I will. So go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and we'll get that up. It's already up. You'll find it before I find it. That's for sure. We think about exotic pets. What types of pets do you consider exotics?
We see everything from invertebrates to small mammals. So in terms of species that we commonly see. We see tropical fish. We see the occasional tarantula, which mm-hmm. Of the invertebrates. And if you're looking phylogenetically, going up the scale, we see fewer amphibians. But of the amphibians we see, they tend to be tree frogs. Of the reptiles, we tend to see ball pythons, bearded dragons. And then from birds, we see a lot of different citizen species are parrots.
Yeah.
From budgies, little budgies, which yeah. people commonly call parakeets, up to macaws.
So a pretty broad range. Ruth in Madison, you mentioned birds, and I think she has a comment about birds. Let's go there. Ruth, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, Larry. Hi, Dr. Slatke. You know me. Dr. Buck and Romeo come to see you, the two macaws, blue and gold macaws, and then Joey and Liberty are my two cockatiels.
Hi, Ruth.
But anyway, So I just wanted to say that a lot of times people think they need to get a big showy parrot. And if they do, they should do a lot of homework before they do that. And they should also consider getting the animal from a rescue. And there's three rescues in Wisconsin right now. And easily found on the internet. They're very but I think that especially if they're the first time bird owner, they should not overlook the little budgies and the cockatiels and the little pocket parrots, because those birds don't have any idea how small they are, and they have just as much personality as the big birds. And the thing is that people don't realize with birds, their instincts are so ancient. They're like having a dinosaur in your house, and in my case, 2-3 pound dinosaurs. they don't know why they're defending their territory, but they have the mind to deviously land some bites. But they don't have any idea why they're doing it. So when they do it, sort of like, oh yeah, just defending the territory, nothing to see here, move along. But birds have evolved along a completely different path than any other creature on Earth. They have lungs that are different, their digestive system is different, their skin, their bones, their eyes. Everything is different about a bird than is about, like a mammal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Ruth, you've given me a good segue, because I would say that we recommend, as for first-time bird owners, we always recommend getting a budgie or what people commonly call parakeets, a small Australian species, or a cockatiel. Both are really good choices. You'd be surprised how many people come to me and say, I have a macaw as my first bird, which is generally a really bad idea to have a large parrot that screams and bites. And if you're not used to parrot behavior can be quite challenging to deal with. So cockatiels and budgies tend to be our top recommendations for your sort of starter bird.
We had actually, I was thinking about my first parakeet, which was named Gorman Thomas, after the baseball player. And Gorman Thomas was a wonderful bird, and we had a lot of fun together.
Yeah. They can be quite entertaining as well. And I think the biggest problem we see with some of these small birds is that there's a lot of misinformation about what to feed them. People tend to feed seed diets to pet birds, and seed diets tend to be just really high-fat diets, and we always recommend feeding a pelleted food. And I think ultimately, the bottom line is if you get a new pet that's a non-domestic pet, an exotic pet, please come to a veterinarian who is accustomed to dealing with such pets so they can actually help you with all of the care, the husbandry with the pets.
What about Ruth's comment about seeking, if you're going to get a bird, through a rescue instead of perhaps through a breeder?
I think there are a lot. What happens is people tend to buy a large parrot species as their first pet, and they're not used to it. They can't deal with the vocalizations. They bond to people. There are all kinds of complicated behaviors that some of the larger parrot species exhibit, and so they end up in rescues. A lot of these birds will end up in rescues, and I think rescue organizations, it's a great way to go in terms of finding a bird that you might be compatible with. Some of the birds that end up in rescues have been passed from home to home, and oftentimes it's just like a dog that gets passed from home to home and ends up in a shelter. They can have some behavioral issues that really require a person who knows a lot about bird and bird behavior to try to deal with that particular animal.
Yeah. So, well, Ruth, I thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call very much. I want to give some others a chance to join in here. But thanks much for your comments. Mark in Milwaukee up next. Mark, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, this is Mark Dimpius. I have a question in regards to a teapot pig. And I'm curious if you have any information. My wife really wants one. I've Googled them to see, you know, how to take care of them. And I can't get a good feel if it would really be a good pet or not. And then in addition, we've got two dogs. We have a Boston Terrier, his name is Toad, and a shepherd. So I'm curious if they would get along as well.
So teapot pigs are these little miniature pigs that are very popular. You see them on the internet now, very popular. Pigs are incredibly smart animals, and certainly we would consider pigs at the level of dogs, if not more intelligent than many dogs. The teapot pigs, there may be some issues with congenital abnormalities, heritable problems in some of the teapot pigs where they eventually have some disease problems. In terms of care, I think the biggest problem we see with any of the pig species that are kept as pets is obesity. They can be quite messy. It depends on how you maintain them. But obesity tends to be the biggest health problem with the teapot pigs. There's no reason to think that they can't get along with your dogs if you were to get a teapot pig. But you should you get a teapot pig, I'd recommend you take it to a veterinarian to have a good exam and a discussion about husbandry issues. Take it to somebody who knows about small pig species.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Dr. Kurt Sladke, clinical associate professor in zoological medicine and section head of the Special Species Health Service at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, if you would like to join in, the number to call, and we have some open lines to get you on pretty quickly now, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're talking about the fascinating world of exotic pets with Dr. Curt Sladke. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and post a photo or a question or comment there. And we do have some comments from Facebook. Marlene says it's a bad idea to own a wild exotic pets if they're taken from the wild and not raised to or intended as pets.
Absolutely. We would strongly discourage. It's hard to know sometimes if they're wild caught and they end up in the pet store market. But we would certainly encourage people to adopt exotic pets that have been born and raised in captivity.
Yeah, for sure. We had a few comments or questions on the Facebook page about the ball python. Is it? And we've got it up now, and you can see on the right side there's a photo of Judith holding the ball python. There's another one in the photo section over on the left side too. So, a couple of photos there. People wondering, and it's fairly small as you look at it. They're wondering, is it an adult or a young one?
The size of the ball python that Judith is holding is about. Fully grown ball python may be just slightly larger than that. They don't get very big.
So a couple feet?
Maybe up to 3 at the most. They tend to, like I said, they're called ball pythons because they tend to coil up in your hand. If you're going to buy a snake, a ball python is a great first choice of snake species. They generally are easygoing. Mm-hmm. And they are fairly easy to maintain because, a rodent, occasional rodent is sort of a perfect nutritional package, so to speak, compared to some of the herbivorous reptiles and other species that we have to work a little bit harder and we see a lot more nutritional issues with. So ball pythons are a great choice.
And this one is also shedding, is it not?
This one's shedding. It fed just a couple days ago. It managed to poop near Judith, unfortunately, and it's shedding its skin. So they go through periodic sheds where all of their skin, if they're healthy, all of their skin comes off, not necessarily in one big chunk, but, a few chunks.
There we go. Martha in Muskego, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about chickens and other things that might protect them. I know there are certain dogs that can be raised with chickens, and they will save them from predators. Because we have to keep our chickens in our pen now because they keep getting eaten by the foxes and coyotes. So I was wondering if you could train a pig to do that. Is there any pig species that would be able to? Because I'm allergic to dogs.
I have never heard of a pig protecting a chicken coop, but they're certainly smart. They can be trained every bit as quickly as a dog. I don't honestly have probably the answer you want because I've never heard of pig being used in that way. I certainly have heard of some of the herding dog species being used in that way, but not pigs.
You know, are you allergic to poodles as well as shedding?
Yes.
Even poodles. Oh, I was going to say, because poodles are really smart.
Yeah. And, I know there's some kind of Australian dog species that is really good with chickens and, make sure that nobody kills them. But I don't. I was hoping maybe a pig would be a good substitute, but I guess I don't know.
Well, yeah.
If you do it, please call me and let me know if it works.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. At least, as you say, they're really smart.
They're super smart. Amazing animals. I was walking on Picnic Point last summer, and I saw a woman walking. I thought it was a dog, but as I got closer with my dogs, she had a small pet pig on a leash. It was, and my dogs looked at it like, "What the heck is that?"
Oh man! Let's turn to Eric in Madison next. Hi, Eric.
Hi. The question about I actually took Dr. Slatke's wildlife diseases course a couple years ago as a student at UW, and I was thinking about some of the if he could comment on some of the possibilities of some of the zoonosis sort of diseases that can come. I'm thinking about the monkeypox episode in Madison a few years back. If there's some cautionary sort of words that maybe the doctor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah. Eric. Thanks for the call. That's an absolutely excellent question. So what do we worry about with exotic pets? One of the things you hear, probably most people have heard about, is salmonella or salmonellosis from reptiles. A gastrointestinal bacteria that causes severe diarrhea. And it's why we always recommend if you have a reptile as a pet, you should always wash your hands. And as I tell my students, before you eat your peanut butter sandwich, make sure you wash your hands after handling reptiles. So salmonella in reptiles is a biggie. There's a disease called Chlamydophila sitici, which is a disease that birds will pass on to humans that can cause sort of chronic flu-like symptoms, respiratory symptoms in people. And it's a disease that needs to be dealt with through antibiotics with people. And then you mentioned monkeypox. That was that monkeypox showed up in pet prairie dogs in the state of Wisconsin several years ago, and it was transmitted by African giant Gambian rats that were shipped over, caught in the wild in West Africa, brought to a big warehouse in Chicago. The rats were maintained next to a group of prairie dogs meant for the pet trade, and it jumped to the prairie dogs. The prairie dogs were then adopted by people, people started getting monkeypox. So it was an exotic virus that ended up. It's related to smallpox. It is not smallpox, but it ended up as an African virus that ended up in the state of Wisconsin in prairie dogs. So that was a major scare, and that's something we're always worried about is the transmission of diseases from your pets, the potential for transmission of diseases from your pets to you. Another really good reason that if you get an exotic pet, to visit a veterinarian who knows what they're doing and can talk to you about such things to worry about, especially if you have kids and or people who have immune-compromised diseases in your family.
Yeah. Eric, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Prairie dogs came up, and it just reminded me that I would not consider a prairie dog a good exotic pet to have, because prairie dogs are such social animals that unless they're living with other prairie dogs, I can't imagine, even ones that were raised to be pets.
Right. It's I've seen so many bite wounds and scratches from owners who have prairie dogs. I always refer to prairie dogs as having a running lawnmower as a pet, because they're constantly biting and scratching, and it's just not. There are some animals that just were not meant to be a good exotic pet, and prairie dogs are one of them.
We have, by the way, you can call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. 1-800-642-1234. Louise is interested in having a lizard as a pet, but it would be her first time owning an exotic pet. What species would you recommend?
I would recommend bearded dragon. A bearded dragon is probably the most popular species we see nowadays, and it's actually of the reptile species. It's of the lizard species. It's relatively simple to maintain. They're omnivorous. You need to feed them sort of a salad mix and some invertebrates mixed in. So bearded dragons would be a good choice. Another option would be a leopard gecko, which is more insectivorous, so eats insects and invertebrates. Either one would be a good choice. I think bearded dragons tend to be fairly hardy compared to some of the other lizard species, and they're pretty easygoing. They're not the kind of species that you need to worry so much about biting you. And the more you handle some of these animals as well at home, the more they get used to being handled, and the easier going they become.
We had a caller, Gene, who couldn't stay with us, but was concerned about exotic pets that might get into natural habitats. Are there some that are especially dangerous to our native wildlife in that way if they get out? And are there regulations on exotic pets that are strong enough to sort of help prevent that?
Well, the best example of exotic pet release in the wild is the Everglades. All of the exotic pythons that have been released in the Everglades, they're saying up to 30,000 former pet pythons may be in the Everglades eating native wildlife. That's an extreme example. There's a push to try to eliminate a lot of those animals in the Everglades, try to catch them and euthanize them. There is always a concern about people getting rid of exotic pets. Another good example is there's an aggressive Asian snakehead fish species that people thought was a good idea to keep as pets several years ago, and some of them have actually been found in the lakes of Wisconsin. People have dumped them in lakes, and they can change the ecosystem so dramatically that it is definitely an issue. Fortunately, we just don't. You know, the Everglades issue is the biggest problem we hear about. We don't hear a lot about other escaped former exotic pets. Probably many of them, if they're let go in the wild, will not survive.
I remember a film that I watched a few years back now, maybe more than a few years back, about a colony of, I think, small parrots that were in California. And that had gotten away in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of colonized and then started breeding and
they're free ranging. Yeah,
and they're free ranging.
Yeah,
yeah.
And there's a flock of budgies in Chicago that's managed to. Here's a species that's from an arid, warm part, hot part of Australia. And there are several that have been released over the many years, decades in Chicago, and they've formed their own flock around they tend to live around the Lincoln Park Zoo. So there are some examples of, and most of these flocks of birds that get out probably aren't going to do a lot of immediate damage to the ecosystem, unlike the pythons in the Everglades.
I know Judith has seen that flock in San Francisco, and she'll probably post some photos of that on Facebook, so that'll be kind of fun, too. We have Cheryl in Conover next. Cheryl, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you today? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a comment to make about animals in general, whether they be exotic or domesticated. It's really time that people clearly understand that when you get an animal and you make a commitment to an animal, it is a commitment. And with Easter around the corner, bunnies are a 10-year commitment on the part of the human. And it's sad to see that these humans who want to domesticate or want to take on a pet aren't willing to dedicate the amount of time necessary to keep that animal until its end.
Yeah. Hi, Cheryl. Thank you. You've made a very good point. Giving rabbits and ducks as pets, as potential pets during the Easter and the spring season is really a bad idea because most people that receive them as pets are not prepared for them. Rabbits are a great pet if you're committed to it and you're committed to the proper nutrition and husbandry. But if you've received a rabbit as a gift during this season and you've never really thought about having a rabbit, they tend to end up in shelters. They tend to end up basically unwanted. And your other point about commitment. As a veterinarian who sees a lot of exotic pets, there are many people who are committed, firmly committed, as committed to a rabbit or a rat as they would be to a dog. But there are many people who aren't committed to the financial investment and the learning curve, the investment in learning about the animal. So your points are well taken.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Peter a chance from Whitewater. Peter, hi to you.
Hi. Just a quick comment on the escaped exotic pets, because that's how my wife and I acquired two of our pet birds, avid backyard birders in southeast Wisconsin. And all of a sudden, one day, we had this brilliant lime green little bird in our backyard, and turned out it was a parakeet that we assume had escaped from someone's home. And it lived in the neighborhood for the entire summer, going to various bird feeders in the neighborhood. Everybody knew about the bird. And then it came to be late October, early November, getting cold. We were pretty certain it would not make it. We were luckily enough to be able to capture the bird, and so we ended up keeping that parakeet, and we got it from friends since they're flock birds, and that's what kind of got us into keeping birds. And then it was actually a number of years later where some acquaintances of ours were out on their deck, and a cockatiel landed on this gentleman's shoulder, and they ended up acquiring that. They tried to find the owners, from the neighborhood. No one ever came up to take the bird. So they ended up keeping it for a short time, and they didn't particularly want a bird, so we ended up taking that cockatiel in. But they've been wonderful pets. But it does bring up that point of trying to make sure that if you have your pets, that you keep track of them, especially these exotic species that probably wouldn't, neither one of them probably would have made it through winter in southeast Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Thank you, Peter.
It did make for fun for us, because we'd never had pets like that before, and they were both wonderful pets that we really enjoyed. But again, they weren't ours to begin with.
Yeah.
We see a few pet birds that get out in the winter and get pretty severe frostbite on their digits on their feet. So it can be a real problem. But a lot of times they just... the owners sometimes are very well-meaning owners. They just happen to open the door and the bird is flighted, doesn't have trimmed wings, and gets out the door, and that's it. So,
yep, there you go. That happened to a good friend of mine, and it landed up in the tree right outside the house, and he climbed the tree and fell out of the tree and ruined didn't break his back, but he didn't get the bird. The bird flew off, and he said he was laying there in agony, and his two kids were crying about the lost parakeet.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and they never got it back. And he always hoped that somebody, like Peter, that somebody in the neighborhood found that bird and kept it. They watched a long time. We have, again, you can join us, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Email from Jesse, who has a couple of conures. And a Myers parrot, and they are amazing little family members. I'm always looking for better ways to keep them healthy and happy. Do you have any advice on keeping them?
So,
conures. What are conures?
Conures are a small species. There are several subspecies. They have dark beaks. They're very vocal. They make very good pets. So they're one of the smaller cytocene species. The Myers parrot is a smaller parrot as well. I think one of the biggest issues we deal with every day with pet birds is inappropriate nutrition. So people tending to feed seed diets rather than pelleted diets, which, again, I'm repeating myself, but they're high fat. And
those pelleted diets, you can get those. I mean, it's not like they're not available.
No, right. But a lot of what happens is the seed diets, the high fat diets, it's like feeding a bird a bowl of Milky Ways versus a bowl of broccoli. And so the bird, if you give them both the opportunity to feed on pellets and seeds, they're always going to go for the seeds. It's just like a kid. So these all seed diets tend to be low vitamins, high fat, and become very problematic and really reduce the lifespan of most birds. And the other problem we tend to see is Most of these birds are bonded. Many birds are raised by people, and they're bonded to people. And so they start plucking feathers and doing some abnormal behaviors because they're bonded to the human, and the human isn't acting like a bonded bird would act. And so we see a lot of behavioral issues as well.
John in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi. I was just wondering what knowledge you may have about the wisdom or lack thereof of keeping an African pied crow as an exotic pet.
You have a question about legality. I don't know anybody who has an African pied crow, to be honest with you, as a pet. I know people over the years in different parts of the country that have had crows as pets, and in the state of Wisconsin, a crow is native wildlife and is not legal to keep without a permit. But crows are incredibly intelligent animals. I mean, unbelievable what they're capable of, and I think pied crows are going to be they're sort of in the same category. Usually a species like an African pied crow, I'd be a little worried that it was maybe taken from the wild, but most species like that are legal in the state of Wisconsin because it's not native wildlife. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I probably can't answer any more specific questions about that species of bird.
There we go. Thank you, John. An email from Nevin, who's love to have a small exotic mammal, maybe a hedgehog or a rat or chinchilla. Are those fine choices?
I think rats are a great first pet. They're super intelligent. They're easy to take care of. They're social. There's nothing negative to say about rats other than they have a very short lifespan. And so people who are rat owners and you've got to go through periods of sadness as you lose your rats. They tend to have a 3-year lifespan, approximately. You've got this great animal around, but for a very short time. The biggest problems we see with rats as they age is they develop mammary tumors, mammary cancer.
Oh.
A lot of the females and males develop mammary cancer as well. So chinchillas, guinea pigs are a great small mammal pet, very friendly, easygoing, tend not to bite too much. So chinchillas are easy pets. They're a little more high strung than guinea pigs. So I'd probably look at, as first time mammal pets, I'd probably look at rats and guinea pigs as good choices.
Well, Kurt, it's always such a pleasure to have you come by, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again. This
of course, I love this, Larry. I love being on your show.
Well, Dr. Kurt Sladke, we love having you on as well. Kurt is Dr. Sladke is a clinical associate professor in zoological medicine, section head of the Special Species Health Service at UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Really fun talking about exotic pets, wasn't it? There are so many great things about sharing your life with a companion animal, whether it's a lizard, a bird, or maybe it's more commonly a dog or a cat. One of the less enjoyable parts of having pets, and I can tell you from experience, is helping them through various health issues associated with cancer. And coming up next, we're going to visit with two veterinary oncologists. They'll share information about diagnostic and treatment options for pets with cancer and certainly be able to answer your questions as well. So I hope you'll stay with us right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.